Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome to the BBLL show with Nikita and Jewel as your hosts. Today we're going to do Ironheart. Disclaimer, right off the bat, there's going to be spoilers. So at this point, if you're listening and you haven't seen it and you don't want to hear spoilers, then go ahead and turn off the podcast, okay, and come back to it. This works two ways. You either listen to it and it makes you want to watch the show, or you get upset because there's spoilers and then you don't want to watch the show. So right off of that, we're letting you know that there's spoilers. Welcome to Blurred's Word section. We do three shows for the BBOL show. This segment is Blurred's Words. We have one coming up soon called Cumby Beacon. That's going to be like our cool new poly space. So we hope you enjoy it. Welcome, Jewel. Welcome, Jennifer. Glad to see you. Every Saturday, 12 o'clock, Blurred's Words. The BBOL show is going to introduce Blurred's Words, and whatever show we're watching, whatever book we're reading, whatever game we're playing, and whatever music we like. So welcome, welcome, welcome. Let's start this off with Ironheart. Ironheart was like the bomb. It came out on Disney Plus. The main characters are Anthony Ramos as Hood, of course. Dominique Thorne is the main player. She is Ironheart. This young lady is going to go places. You have Shea Coulee as Slug. Lyric Ross as Natalie Washington, Manny Montana as John, Alden Ehrenreich, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, as Joe, Regan Alia as Zelma, Zoe Tarakis as one of the fighters, the twins, and Shakira Barrera as Roz, the other twin, and Clown, the fire starter, I think, as Sonia Dennis, and Xavier, who plays brother, Natalie's brother, as Matthew Elam. Great characters. These are the primary characters. We're doing the first three episodes. This is part one of the first episode, first three episodes of Ironheart. And if you can, check it out. Check out Jewel's tremendously brilliant blog on the website, blurredword.com. This show, Ironheart, it was excellent. It was excellent. It's about a young lady from Chicago, who is going to school, in engineering school, specialty kind of engineering school, which Jewel, let me say this. These are two perspectives, Jewel's and I, and, Jewel is a super fan of Marvel, and has read this comic book also. And me, actually, I just watched the show as someone who's watching a cool show because I haven't read the comic book. And man, I was so impressed. Now I'm going to probably get the comic book. And that's what makes a good show, right? Makes you want to go out and buy the comic book or the item or the entity that is driven by the show's premise. I think one of the things I really liked about this was that, and Jewel can get more into it, was produced by two black women. Ryan Coogler has really, really, really shown himself to promote the black community in such positive aspects, and well-driven storytelling. And it really, I mean, it makes my nerdy glirty heart happy. As someone who follows the Marvel community, you know, I think he did a really excellent job, and I really love that he had two female directors, two women directors. And they did an excellent job. And if you want, you should follow them, I would think, on the old X, even though, you know, I don't really promote that platform like that. But the two directors were Sam Bailey and Angela Barnes, and they did an excellent job, in my opinion. So now let me go back to the story. Riri is played by Dominique Thorne. You may have seen her in other productions. Very talented young lady, and she's Ironheart, and she's a genius, and she's going to this special school from, you know, as protege of Stark, Tony Stark, right? And she's been selected, you know, underprivileged, getting selected to go to this school and amplifying her genius. And as it opens, she's narrating the initial part of the story where you first see her and Natalie together. Now, you don't really know what's all going on, I guess, unless you've read the comic book. And, you know, it's a flashback image of two young ladies. And, you know, she asks the question, what do you want to do? What do you want to be? And Natalie just says, I just want to be happy. And she's happy and go lucky. And you can kind of look at Riri and see she's very, you know, neutral, kind of closed in. But this is her friend. This is her partner, her homegirl. You know what I mean? And they are close. And this is a premonition that something has occurred that has really affected their life. But Riri is kind of narrating this story. And there's, like I said, three episodes, but she's talking about it, and she's talking about herself. And the message I was getting strongly is, here's a young lady who's so talented, and she feels like it's not appreciated. Now, she's just weird, you know, messing everything up, and stuff is blowing up, and this is how it starts out the show. And you're like, oh man, what's getting ready to go down? And I'm going to let Jewel bring us into the whole premise of the show and what it's about, what drives the character, and how she saw the character. Jewel, you have the mic.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good night. Welcome, everybody. Thank you, Nikita, for that. That was wonderful. I love the perspective and our own little exposition there. As Nikita has said, Ironheart, Riri Williams, is the star of the show. And she starts off at MIT. If you remember, if you go back to Wakanda Forever and Black Panther, we have Wakanda Forever, Dominique Thorne playing Riri Williams, and Shuri goes with Okoye looking for her. And so we know, if you're MCU fans, if you're watching this as a fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know that this has been hyped. We're excited. And as Nikita's already said, she's blowing things up. She's at MIT. And we also have moments of uncertainty, because she's out here doing her things, but we also see her handing tech off to individuals, and we see her trying to have a little side hustle. And for me, that speaks pretty loudly to the entire theme, because we have multiple themes in these first three episodes. And the first that screams really loudly is blackity black. And I love that. We have Ryan Coogler again to thank for executive producing this. And he picked a phenomenal woman to write the screenplay. And that's Shanaka Hodge. And what I love about it is we have two main characters, black women, as Nikita so brilliantly placed it, Dominique Thorne and Lyric Ross. And Lyric Ross is Riri's best friend, and her name is Natalie. We have a moment of clarity where Riri's called into the office, and we get a review of what she's been doing the last few years at MIT. And basically, her side hustle was selling tech to be able to supplement the grant that was given to her under this Stark Grant Fellowship, this Stark Fellowship. And we know she's going to make a suit that she's envisioned. We get a screenshot, if you're paying attention, in the beginning of the Griot algorithm, which is how she based the tech and the AI for the creation of this brand new suit. And just a definition, because we love words. Griot is the troubadour historian from West African ancestry, a member of a class of traveling poets, musicians, but mainly storytellers who hold on to the long-held legacy of oral history, keeping the history and the keepers of history and the sacred past. Okay, so the Griot algorithm is what creates the AI, and we know that something's happened. Over the past three episodes, we understand that this is a young woman who's been through a lot, and a lot of it is loss. She's suffering from PTSD. She lost her father. She lost her best friend, Natalie. And she's suffering through it. In the beginning, in the first episode, they're calling her on it. You're brilliant. You were given this amazing opportunity as a Black woman from Chicago, and we wanted to see where you were going to go with this. And we have done everything we can to help you create greatness. And Riri pretty much stands up and says, you just want me to be small. And I refuse to be small. I refuse. And they say, I don't think so. You're messing up here and you're expelled. And she says, bet. And security guards show up and she steps into her suit that she has created. Remember, it's a grant. And grants is, that's money that's given to you. That's your money. Okay. But she got the side hustle. So she's got the side hustle selling projects and prototypes to, this is how amazing this woman is. She is not just selling prototypes to people at MIT. She has gone across everyone in the tri-state area, in the area of MIT, Boston's area, selling as many prototypes as she can, getting A's for people who she doesn't even know, they're just paying her, to the end. Invest in this suit, this brainchild genius thing that she has created. And she steps into the suit and they say, we're making sure she's not going to take anything that doesn't belong to her. And she said, I would never. This was gotten by me, for me, through grants and hard work, and flies off with the suit. And what I think was poignant for me was the feeling that we as Black women and Black folks in general are rarely given opportunities to step into our greatness, rarely given opportunities to be better than what society expects of us or thinks of us. And we lack the resources. And here she was given some resources, but still didn't feel as though she was allowed to grow, because the first defense was, I feel small. And as she's flying back home from MIT to Chicago, what we see is the decline of access. So her access to the school and the database and the AI that's tied into that, which is called Trevor, gets shut down, and she loses power slowly. Power. How empowering was that? And as she's heading home and about to land in a neighborhood in Chicago, she is literally, quite literally, stripped of her dreams piece by piece by piece off of her person. And I thought that was so poignant. She lands in the middle of a community and everybody's just really concerned. And they start lobbing, as we do with the dozens, right? Oh, wow, that was you? What's going on? What should I call you? Iron Ma, which was my favorite nickname that they gave her. And she meets this little man who's going to help her out. And from there, we know she's desperate. She has a dream. She has a place she wants to go. She wants to strive higher, bigger. And the three episodes starts us on this journey of who is Ironheart? Why is she doing this? Where are we going? And there's nothing but skies from here. Nikita.
So as I was watching this, thank you for that, Jewel. Very good initial start in. I'm glad you explained the AI, because when I looked at it at first, it reminded me of Clippy from Microsoft, you know, the little pencil. But it, on Microsoft, it was a little clip, right? I don't know how old everyone is in the room, but that's what it reminded me of. And I was like, oh no, old school, probably not. Okay. So that interface was kind of dope to me. As a big, you know, tech nerd, I'm listening and looking and thinking to myself, this is so brilliant. She's using magnetic, information, you know, to use this suit to jettison her, to propel her. But also, you know, as she's flying, I'm just drawn by the kind of mechanics of how she's doing that. And they sort of kind of explain it too in a geeky, nerdy way. Right? So as Jewel left off, she met the young man with the little red wagon who had all his stuff. He's a little hustler. Had all this stuff on there, and we haven't yet really delved into who Riri is, right? What makes her tick? We know she got kicked out of school. We know she's in Chicago. I love how they continuously amplify the Chicago skyline, so you knew where she was. You know how sometimes you're watching a movie and you're like, I don't know, where are they? You know what I mean? This looks like this, or this could look like anyone's home, right? But that's Chicago. And so I thought it was pretty dope. She, you know, ends up, meeting these new people, you know, because a crime is going on at the same time. Some crime is happening. And you see this little gang, a techie guy, with a laptop, and being a new person, right? You're like, oh, so these little criminals, what they got to do with the story? So you see them, him with his laptop, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be like a geeky, serious little hustle they're doing there. The technical genius, Stu, he wants to be called Rampage. I mean, you know, he's really big about his name because everybody wants a superhero name or a villain name, right? And they're not taking him seriously. He's an underground guy though. And he's fumbling around and he makes an error. And, that right there, I'm like, it's going to cost them. And I realized it even more that it was going to cost them when, Johnny and Hood were on the balcony talking about they had to replace him just before Riri flew over. And I said, yeah, it's not going to end well for that young cat. They're going to replace him. Now, little did I know, you know, this was my first time when I watched. The second time I watched it, I was like, I already knew. But I'm like, oh, poor little Afro guy. He's getting ready to get hemmed up. And he's such a little nerdy dirty too. And he's smart though, right? But not as smart as Riri. You know, you can sell parts without understanding how parts work. That doesn't make you a parts expert. It makes you someone that knows how to sell parts without understanding how parts work. I feel like he's like that kind of tech, but he's smart, but he's not as smart as her. And that's unfortunate, because it's going to end up costing him later on. So Stu and them are climbing. We're introduced to a character, main character named Hood, literally a guy that's wearing a hood. I saw something on social media and someone was like, I wish they would have named him something better than Hood. Well, bruh, he's wearing a hood. Somebody else gonna call him. It makes sense to me. Call me crazy. Okay. So, you know, I'm watching that and I'm thinking, all right, cool. So they tell her, they go, they find her, they give her bona fides. And then, you know, after, you know, she shows up, they use the one thing that someone who has none of this needs. Money to get her to join their little crimey gang, because she's imperfect also. Still, we don't know her whole history yet. We know something bad has happened. She's got a sadness about her, and we keep seeing these little flashbacks of her friend Natalie. This is where I say to myself, genius. Okay, they tell her she needs to show up. Well, her suit is imperfect, the suit that she got from school. It's imperfect. So she's sitting at her desk. She's got this brain neural thing, I want to call it, attached to her head. And she's downloading the information, thinking that she's going to revamp her AI, you know, with her brainwaves, right? And she makes something called Natalie. Now, how much genius is this? Using the spelling of her best friend's name, N-A-T-A-L-I-E, put periods there, please. Neuro Autonomous Technical Assistant and Laboratory Intelligence Entity. I about fell out my chair. I'm like, that's genius, 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 genius. Okay. She has made a whole new AI here, better than Clippy. It's an actual, you know, simulation of her friend using her brainwaves, and she doesn't realize why. And right away, I'm like, because it was in your subconscious, and now it's there, and you did it. You know, I'm screaming at the TV this. Why are you asking these questions? You're too smart for that. Okay, so, but that's the nerdy me, right? And then the, you know, her disbelief, my amazement. And Natalie's like, I'm just here. And that's who I am. And so it's kind of dope. And I really like how the creators took this and not having read the comic book, I had to ask Jewel about it, but they took this and they really made it, a symbiotic portion of the show. Like, this is her friend, and it's going to become important too. The entity will be very important as an AI. Now, some people had an issue with it. I don't know why, because we are in this tech society. And to do something like this, I mean, you know, it's pretty genius, I think, because you make everybody always talks about AI this, AI that. This is her virtual assistant. The job is to protect and to do the upgrades and do the technical stuff, like that Riri, you know, tells it to do, right? Input, output, what you input into it, that's what's going to come out. That's what you would think. But if it has your memories, it knows who you are and how your brain works, and will also be able to kind of work ahead of you. Thing about AI is it's constantly learning. As we see, Natalie constantly learns. Natalie learns how to override Riri's controls. Natalie is mischievous, as her friend is, as she remembers her friend, you know. And when it starts, and they have to, before they have to go to the criming situation, and it's kind of interesting to me how the AI has a conscience. I thought that is literally Riri's conscience, right? Because it's her subconscious. But that's how I saw it. I'm not sure that that is how the director meant for it to be, but that's how I saw it. And I thought it was pretty dope. I also think that when Natalie goes out on the date with Xavier, we get introduced to Xavier. Xavier is Natalie. I mean, sorry, Riri goes out on the date. That would be gross. When Riri goes out on the date with Xavier, Xavier is Natalie's brother. All right. And, you know, you start getting more of the storyline of what happened with Natalie. Natalie passed away when she was murdered. She was killed, you know, her and Riri's stepfather. The story, you know, takes a more realistic turn, and you get to see a different aspect of who Riri really is and why she so tries to be protective. Every single time in this show, the reference to being small comes in. You know, I mean, think about it. She's a tiny girl, builds a big machine, has big energy, has big dreams, but she's feels like she's small. We as Black women are often played small, meaning that our talent is used, but they always put us on the back burner or on the sidelines, you know, while also utilizing our skills and our talent. This was a constant drumbeat in this show. And I just thought it was brilliant. I thought it was spoke to the truth of how we as Black women see ourselves, and young Black women, young girls should be allowed to dream big, move big, and be big, you know, not just physically, but spiritually, emotionally, critically, technically, and all of that. And I just thought it was genius. I thought it was smart how the messages were put in there, and it spoke to the truth of who we are and how this girl, we're going to watch her grow into the superhero she really is during the process of this show. Jewel, you have the mic.
Thank you. Thank you. I agree. Oh, to be young, gifted, and Black. Isn't that amazing? Riri, in this first three episodes, grows in ways that we aren't often given an opportunity to. We get to see her flaws. We get to see her dreams. We get to see her failures and her successes in a very human way and not as rigid as she internalizes. We have a lot of forgiveness through the whole thing. We have a lot of embracing and community. I love that constantly, as Nikita has already mentioned, Black women are the forefront of the picture, not a sideline, not your support, not just your support, not just there to cheer you on as, you know, the chubby comedic relief, comedy relief that we sometimes play in all these other moments. But we are the creators, we are the storytellers, and we are the superheroes as well. And that just spoke volumes. It's amazing to me that people saw issue with that, to talk about Nikita's comments. I will say that the first moment that Riri shows on paper is in the Marvel Invincible Iron Man Volume 3, Number 7, issued in May in 2016. However, the first time Ironheart was given a solo moment of her own to be her own story, it was written by a Black woman, Eve Ewing. Okay, and that was in 2018. So if we're following the 2018 version of her canon, if we're following who she is as a person, y'all need to cop that issue, Marvel One, Eve Ewing, because it shows exactly what Shanaka Hodge placed on screen, and it is an homage to it. It is a love of it. It is amazing. It doesn't deviate from volume one. I'm not going to speak about volume two and volume three, but it really is fantastic. And those of you that are arguing because the AI is Natalie, she is the AI in volume one. Contrary to the first iteration when she makes a guest appearance, where it's Tony Stark's AI. That's a different timeline. That's a different arc. Okay. So it's not a changing of anything. It's just as comics and comic book lovers, and this is all fantasy. None of it is set in reality. So when you have that overlap, we can give grace to an artistry that allows for everyone to see themselves reflected in it. And we're talking about a Black woman inventing an amazing AI, an amazing suit. Why wouldn't we give her her own accolades and her own story? And so Shanaka Hodge uses Eve Ewing's idea of it and embraces it. And thank you to these amazing women, because through this combination of her consciousness, as Nikita called Natalie, which I agree. Again, Lyric Ross plays her. We have Riri's flaws hugged by the softness of her best friend. And we have Cree Summers coming in and making sure she got the sage in, and she's cleaning the room and cleansing everything. One of my all-time heroes of cartoons. And if y'all ever saw all of the things that she's ever done, Freddie, shout out to Freddie. It is an amazing thing to see our childhood right there on screen, and all the iterations of who we were as nerdy Black women given grace on the screen, even with the flaws. With this band and rogue of nefarious actors, Eric Andre plays Rampage and fails miserably, as Nikita has already said. And Riri comes in and is given a test. She passes it with flying colors, obviously, because they make it seem like she's gonna be harmed and she needs to save her life. Everybody's impressed, except for, as again, Nikita says, Cousin John, who we see is the boss man, and Hood is the magical villain. And they have a conversation and they're like, man, why are we even doing anything with this chump when we have this genius here who can really help us out? Through her pain and her struggle of figuring out what she wants to do, because what she really wants to do is make this dream a reality. And as we said before, it was ripped from her, all the resources ripped from her part by part. We see her being desperate, right? And she needs money to be able to see her dreams come through fruition. I see a battle, internal battle, of needing to step away from who and where she came from, because we are never seen authentically magnanimous and large enough, because we are where we're from and who we are is always seen, as Nikita said, the theme is small. She has a conversation on this date and the date before that and the conversation before with Xavier. And he says, man, Riri, you got to go all over the world, halfway across the world to Dubai to be big. You can't do that here, which I think was so poignant, because we don't have to leave ourselves and our home and our support system and our family and everything we are in order to see our dreams a reality. We can totally embrace it completely. And I love that, because it spoke so much and so highly of who we are as a community. It takes a village, y'all. It takes a village. And if it does take a village, why would you leave the village and feel so alone? She needed to come back and be embraced by the village and supported by the village to believe in herself without the failures of the side hustle. Now, that doesn't mean you ain't gonna make mistakes. I mean, you're desperate, you need money. And the easiest way to make money is to hustle. And when she was hustling, she kind of lost sight on the things that needed to be seen clearly. And that's where Natalie steps in, as Nikita perfectly said. She's her conscience. She's her subconscious, she's her conscience, she's the AI, she's her best friend. She's got all the emotions that Riri has placed into her, because she's coming straight from her feelings in her brain. And so she calls her on it. Look, something don't seem right. This don't seem right. Don't you think it's wrong that they need you here to do these things? And you ain't asking who this is. You ain't asking what's going on. And by the way, on a kind of magical weirdo level, I'm feeling some stuff from this hood. And that brings me to the soundtrack. Check out the comic book club live.com. They have done the due diligence of going through the first season and getting all the banger songs, the bops that we hear throughout the way. And I was just aligning exactly what we see on the screen with our emotions that we're feeling at the time. There's a moment where it says, go to the devil, and you hear the song's lyrics, go to the devil, go to the devil. And it cues in Hood being taken care of. Also, there's some moments where we see a parallel course between Hood's character, Anthony Ramos's character, and Riri Williams, Ironheart's character. They're both suffering pain. You could tell because there's a moment between the three episodes where John is telling him, I can't continue covering this up, covering his actual pain that he's feeling with the tattoo. And he's got these alien-like, vein-like things going through him in his blood under his skin. It is an infection almost. And as we see him wincing in pain, not just from the tattoo trying to cover it, we see Riri getting ready for the job that they told her she needs to get ready for. And she's frustrated. She's angry. And she's angry that whatever her AI griot algorithm did robbed some of the most painful parts of her. And that's Natalie. And making her face it quite literally in holographic form. And she's angry that the suit is not perfect. And at the same time that John is tattooing Hood, he winces. And it flips to her and she hits the suit and harms her hand. It goes, ah! And you see them both suffering pain of some sort. And it's deep down inside. For her, it's in her conscience, it's in her psyche, it's in her heart, it's in her emotion. For John and Hood, it's in his skin, it's in his blood, it's actually just pulsating through him. And I really love that because we know from the beginning to the end, something's not right. Something's not right. It seems ominous. It's painful. We're feeling it. The songs, it really hits really, really well. If you're a connoisseur of multiple genres and multiple things as we are, at Blurred's Word, the music really was fire. On its own, it speaks for itself. The amount of emotional ups and downs you go through just listening to the soundtrack alone will get you through it in ways that you just cannot imagine. Coupled with the artistry on the screen and the symbolism and the mechanics that they use, these Black women deliver an art form in the most epic ways. And of course, because we got an epic superhero transforming into an amazing piece of work right before our eyes. Nikita, sorry for the technical difficulties, y'all.
No, life is about, like you literally said about Riri, everything isn't perfect and life is about, you know, fixing in betweens and whatever things happen. And then moving on from that, we as Black people should know how to do that pretty well and not get, because life always throws us, ringers. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's what's also cool about this show. Life's throwing her a lot of ringers and she's working around it, literally kind of like how we just did, working around it and getting back on action when they were doing the criming, right? An error occurred and she had to adjust, her and her AI. They had to adjust because they are in the middle of this heist and she loses something for the heist. But before we get to the heist, I guess we need to talk about a piece of equipment that she had to get before the heist and where we get introduced to Joe, which we haven't talked about. So she meets, she gets all of her stuff from this underground, you know, techie, kind of sites, Black sites, right? And she's got all this money now and she needs this part. And the part that she needs, she knows she can get from someone named Joe. So she goes over to Joe and let's be clear. I love it. Black women did this. You know, for those that don't understand, we can communicate without communicating sometimes. Literally, there's a Karen and the whitest Joe. Joe, the guy's name is Joe, the whitest guy in America. Okay. And the whitest neighborhood in America. The Karen lets her dog poopy in the yard. Joe gets a little bit temperately upset about it, you know, and Riri's coming up. And she's like, surely this is not the guy. This is not the genius that has this piece of gear that I need. And turns out, you know, he's all passive and not assertive. And the Karen, you know, is making excuses for letting her dog poopy in his yard, which is really rude and disrespectful. And she should be fined for that, by the way, because that's disgusting. Anyway, I'm surprised the HOA didn't come running down the street. So they go in his house and they're talking and, you know, she lets him know she knows he's the guy. All right. And, you know, she's talking and tells him what she needs. He's the black market guy. And he says, fine. Okay. Yeah. We got to go to my spot. I need all this cool stuff. This biometric eye scanner. When I look in, when they show us the inside of Riri's suit, all I'm thinking is this is just like VR. This is so bad. Bad ASSS. I just think it's wonderful. Just wonderful. I was all like kind of nerded out about it. Right. And so, sorry. Long story short, she gets the part that they need. And when they bring the part up, you know, I just replaced last year the air filter to my heater. When they show this filter, I literally think to myself, oh my God, this is just like my filter, but it's a magnetic filter, right? It's a magnetic repulsar filter, which is actually going to, help her to make her suit stronger and be able to reflect things. And her suit works by using magnetic energy. Transmitting or reflecting. So I'm looking at this and I'm like, so dope. They actually show a filter. That's real. And so dope. They're breaking it down like real people. So I thought that was pretty impressive. Sorry for that moment of holy cow. They're actually, cause you know, sometimes in movies, they make up these terms and they're not real. And you're just like, that is not real. Why are you saying that? That is some real dorkdom. But, this was more, they researched it and Ryan Coogler picks the right people. And it was kind of cool. Because you know, trains, use, similar kind of things to, certain trains, to have the wheels kind of elevate off the rails, right? Go really fast and elevate off the rails. And that's kind of what using a magnetic field. So for me, I'm like, everything about this show is just dope. And what if they make a real suit like that? I mean, that would be really cool. We don't know. They might really have something like this already. I often wonder about these things. And then someone is going to listen to this and say, that Nikita, she's a weirdo. She's just always thinking off the track. Okay, just wait and see what happens. No, but, if they build it, if you build it, they will come. This could be like a military thing. And I've seen something similar to that, but I'm often impressed, by how technology moves. And when they make movies like this, I hope it makes little engineers want to delve into it. I know that Space Force, you know, they probably do a lot of, video game technology and drone technology and things like that. But this sort of stuff encompasses the, real techie, nerdy geekiness of it. And I love that it's a young black girl and she teaches Joe about his white privilege in such a subtle way, that it's amazing. In the car on the ride there, the soundtrack goes perfectly with every scene. And I don't want to take up too much time because at the end of the day, watch it, talk about it. In this particular scene, I'd like to see some conversation on when they're singing Alanis Morissette. I thought it was pretty dope. And I happen to like Alanis Morissette. But what we see here is the beginning of her giving him his strength and his character and his backbone and kind of educating about himself. He acts like he's an ethicist, but what he's doing is unethical. It's kind of hypocrisy, right? And she's just letting him know, dude, come on now. You're acting like you're all this, that, and the other. And literally, as a white man, your privilege protects you. It wouldn't protect me. And I think that will be missed by people who don't understand the community. But what I'm hoping is that people watching this can look at this through a different lens and say, you know, I didn't think about that. And she's right. Here she is from the South Side of Chicago, I'm going to assume, going into this neighborhood, which makes me think somewhere over by Lakeshore or a higher neighborhood on the North Side. And it's pristine, and he's committed. He's living in a pristine neighborhood, committing a dirty crime, literally, because he's stealing all these parts. So and he's doing it underground, right? He's doing it on a black site. So I love that. I love how she kind of schools him, but also kind of helps him to be who he should be or who he needs to become. She helps him to become look at his worth more. And get stronger, because he seems, you're meeting someone who's like kind of suppressed and lets people walk all over him, and you slowly see this change in him made by this young black woman who herself has her own trauma and insecurities. And through the development, we see her growing once again into the Shiro we know she is. Jewel, you have the mic.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Episode 1, Take Me Home. Episode 2, Will the Real Natalie Please Stand Up? Episode 3, We in Danger, Girl. And throughout it, you're absolutely right. Joe, we find out, is Ezekiel Stane, the son of the Tony Stark's nemesis in the other movies. And what is it about the dynamic of a black woman that always constantly, consistently makes people feel better, do better, and rise above their own idea of what their potential is? There is nothing more powerful and magical than the support of a black woman. When you're walking down the street and you ain't feeling great and you got a black woman say, oh, look at you, I see you, go ahead. There's nobody better as a cheerleader, as a support system, to make you feel 10,000 times better. And Nikita's absolutely right. We have this very, very white man, white privileged, average, mediocre person who turns out to be not supposed to be mediocre. He is the son of this almost tech god, the man who was Tony Stark's right-hand man, the head of the military operations in Stark Enterprises. And he's this regular Joe Schmo. He quite literally is Joe Schmo. Cannot even stand up to the poopy that the lady across the street, who Karen Lee says, as it is, says, she comes in and she's like, I just don't want my dog's poop to ruin my yard. And I'm thinking, you can't get more Karen than that. You bring your dog to come across the street to poop in somebody else's yard, just stanking it up. And this man doesn't have the backbone and the character to say, I think not, Karen. Until Riri comes in and gives him that armor, that feeling of maybe I'm a bit bigger than what I think I am. The arrogance of all of it, the lack of self-awareness is huge. And the dichotomy of him questioning whether or not she's gonna like Alanis Morissette and being surprised that someone like, in quotes, her would know the lyrics and sing it. It's just phenomenal. And the judgment was so quick. Like, here you are buying stuff in the black market, and I'm thinking, bro, where did you get it? Didn't you get it in the black market? Where are you selling it? That's all what? The arrogance upon arrogance upon the layers of arrogance, all while she is also building this person's self-esteem up higher than where it was an art form. Because again, there's no greater cheerleader than a black woman. And we know this. And you can go on Instagram if you like, all the white men that have upgraded to black women as their significant other or friends, and they are 50 times better than where they were before. You know, don't argue with me, argue with your mom if you want. Go check it out for yourself. It's out there. And we see that play out on screen. And she's just brilliant in every way. And we see her self-doubt reflected in his own self-doubt. And by her utilizing the parts he has, she gets to feel better because she gets to create the dream she's working on while also, you know, telling this dude who shouldn't feel so down about himself, hey, man, you know, we both doing this thing. And I wouldn't be judging you if you wouldn't be judging me. So let's not, you know, and it really is phenomenal. I can't wait to hear what others have to say. And we really appreciate you listening to us and the various different perspectives that we hear over the course of time is really what interests us the most in Blurred's Word. Nikita and I love different points of view, and we can't wait to hear it. Thank you for everything you've done so far, Nikita. It has been brilliant, Nikita.
Oh, yes. Brilliant episode. Shenanigans. Okay, so I'm gonna say a couple of things in this third episode. The Star Wars versus Star Trek was brought up into it. And I don't want to go deep into it because I really want people to see it. Myself being a Trekkie, Jewel being a Trekkie, Jennifer being a Trekkie, you know, these Star Wars people, some people like both of them. I'm not gonna argue with that. People love what you love, but I'm a Trekkie. Okay, so I was glad to see that. And the soundtrack in this movie was perfect. Perfect for every single scene, every single critical scene, every single emotion. Bravo, bravo, bravo. Please look at the link. We're gonna put this on Blurred's Words on Twitter too, the links to these things, and update it as such, because we want, depending on how it plays, how this listens or how this plays out, hopefully it plays out well. We're gonna want to, you know, to hear that. So I think that when in the third episode, the things that I took note of that I thought were pretty important, we finally get the full story about the what happened with Natalie and Riri. And then we see her get the skin, which I thought was like super neat because I used to watch the Bionic Man back in the day, and I love that he has all these bionics and magnets and things like that. And so I was like, oh, this is so dope. You're gonna use this skin. Oh my gosh, you're gonna put it over this. Because, you know, in the Bionic Man, he was a human being, but he was bionic. And so I like to see this incorporated, old and new incorporated. They had I wanna say, for those of you out there, when I brought up the filter, the name of that filter, even though some of you will be like, we don't care about the name of that filter. Well, I care. I care about the name of the filter. Okay, because I was like, this is kind of dope thing, right? So let me give, it's an MRF, because they made a point of saying, he goes, I don't know, I used to drink AMF. She said, no, it's RMF, right? MRF, magnetic repulsion filter. So I thought that was genius. And I thought, oh my goodness, and a banana cake. Can you still hear me? Okay, good. I thought that was genius. I was getting ready to have a shenanigans fit here. Hand up, Jewel. Jewel.
Continue. Ready, Fischetti.
Okay.
We're good.
I was getting ready to spaghetti. Okay. So really testing my new meditation thing that I'm doing right now. Okay. So Jules already talked about the scarring. Look, we figure out in this third episode, Hood is mean and Hood is evil. Straight up. Is the Hood making him evil? I think you have to have evil for the Hood to project more evil. What's in your heart is what the Hood displays. That's where I went with it, and I think that becomes even more obvious in the part two, which will be the second three episodes. They go into this last heist. First, you know, John tells him, don't do it. Hood does it anyway, and it fails, and someone dies. You know, watching these Marvel movies, I was kind of shocked. Oh my gosh, someone dies in this movie. But that's what happens when you do something that, you know, dangerous, right? Hood is evil. He is an evil guy. And you know, inevitably his evil partner gets killed. Okay, simple as that. And in the process of that, I believe this is where Riri determines who she is. Is she a bad guy or is she a good guy? And she is a good guy who got rid of a bad guy. It's something that's how I saw it. And I think this is where we realize this is where she is going to have to make her choice and look at herself. You know, and Natalie speaks to that because Natalie is her subconscious. And Natalie was there. And then, you know, you got Xavier, you got her mom, you got family. You got to protect them because you know who you're dealing with. You know, she's a street smart young lady. She knows who she is dealing with. And I think she sees the error of her ways. I think, but she's also upset. For those watching this wondering why she was crying at the end, we know that the heist went bad, right? And we know now that Hood found out it was her. But you're wondering, why is she crying so hard? Because no matter what she does, these bad things are happening. She is trying to build better for herself. She has this money. She's doing this. She's doing that. But she's crying. And someone died. And now when she realizes she lost the skin, oh my God, now she's let this guy down. Now she's let Joe down. And Joe trusted her, and people who trusted her, like she was a little girl. She couldn't have saved her stepdad or Natalie, but she's growing into a young woman, and her irresponsibility and her impulsiveness caused this. Her need to know what the hood was to analyze this, she made the mistake, and the foreign object detector caught it, which is FOD in the military, foreign object, you know, on the deck, foreign object damage is FOD, and that's foreign object. And when the detector goes off, her impulsiveness, not listening to Natalie, not listening to her own subconscious, literally, this is what this is. And all these things started happening, and the reality hits her, and overwhelmingly, it's her first true solid emotion. You see some tears during the movement of this show, but this is where you see who she is. Who she is. Jewel, would you like to take the mic, or will we roll to Jennifer? Jennifer, you have the mic.
Hello, 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 ladies. It's so good to be with y'all today to talk about this wonderful show. I really did like this show a lot. There were so many things that I want to talk about, but I'm on a time. So I'm going to clock myself. Thanks, Nikita and Jewel, for having this space. I get to talk about this blurred stuff, the stuff that I love. So thank you for this. So Ironheart. I just love that they gave her her own series, her own space. So it's not very often Black women get to have our own space. And even though this is a fictional character, I just enjoy the fact that they gave her her own space, her own thing in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, instead of just being, the new friend of the Black Panther in part two. So yeah, that was dope to me. So there's a lot I want to say, but I guess I'll start, with the first episode. When Riri is narrating in the beginning, or better yet, when there's that flashback scene at the very beginning of the episode, I noticed that a friend mentions a night with Thor and his hammer. And I thought that was wonderful. That resonated with me because that's one of my favorite characters. And I was like, what's she going to do with Thor? Is they going to fly away or something? I don't know. It was just funny to me. I thought that was great. I thought that was a great little shout out to Thor. Yay, Thor. One of my favorite, Marvel characters. And then, when Riri starts narrating her story, she calls herself the greatest inventor of her generation. And I just thought, wow, those sound like some big shoes to fill, girl. Like, really? I was like, girl, them sound like some big shoes to fill. I just felt, I was like, really? Oh, gosh, that's a lot. That seems like a lot. Seems like a lot to me. And she starts talking about how she's having cash flow problems. That resonated with me also because guess what? I went to college and yes, I had cash flow problems too. That really resonated with me. I just was like, girl, welcome to the club. I was like, it is not easy. You get this amazing opportunity to go to college and people don't want to fund that. Yeah. So she talking about her, she needs a mountain of vibranium, turns out, to make her dreams come true. And I'm just like, girl, welcome to the story. And I also liked how she had this vision. I enjoyed learning about her vision for her suit. She made the suit and she said she wanted to revolutionize safety and continue Stark's legacy, which Stark is up for debate to me. But I'll talk about it a little bit later. But she also mentions reducing first responders, their response time to emergencies and stuff. I thought that sounded great. I was like, that'd be really great if she could accomplish that. That would be helpful, like, you know, to people in her community and beyond. So I thought that was, you know, some great goals, lofty goals, but that's okay. They were great anyway. And she felt like she could do it. So I was like, girl, go on ahead. Keep on running. Keep on running. Then we cut to the scene with her dean. And Adine's talking about, yeah, we found out about what you've been doing. You've been selling these assignments. Then she shouts out all these schools that were like nearby, MIT, Cambridge, Providence, New Haven. I was like, girl, really? I was like, because they don't really say that in any of the other, you know, in Black, especially not in Black Panther 2. You don't know who she's, you know, selling this to, but they pointed out in this, they make a point of it here in this scene. And I was like, okay. And then I noticed that for lack of better terms, the old white guy, he says, he tells Riri, you're a horrible steward of Stark's legacy. And I was like, hold up, wait a minute, dude, hold up. First of all, who are you to tell her who she is? Okay. And second of all, what are you talking about Stark's legacy for? What does it matter to you? But you know, we don't get that information about why this guy is saying this, but you know, we get the point. He's ready for her to go too. Just like, and the dean is like, girl, don't start that with me. I like the Black lady dean. She's like, girl, don't you even start that with me. Like, I ain't been in your corner from the very beginning. I was like, uh-oh. I was like, Riri, you might want to step back a little bit. I was like, girl, don't, because I thought at that point, I thought she might have had a chance to stay in there. But in the end, you know, at the end, we find out she was going to get kicked out anyway. So she gets kicked out. And I feel really bad for her. And, you know, that scene was everything to me. I'm glad that they actually highlighted what it's like to be a Black woman in academic life. This is partially what it's like, okay, for real, in the real world. So when she leaves, she grabs her robot. You know, it's her robot, hers, okay? So she grabs it, and I notice Trevor, MIT's teaching robot and virtual operational resource. Trevor, yeah, I didn't like Trevor. Yeah, he didn't seem like he was assisting her very well, and he was very intuitive, and he was calling her Rayri, like it seemed like white guy. I'm sorry, it seemed like very, very, very white to me. Like, Trevor, really, Rayri? He can't even say her name right. Then he said, it seems like you're having a corporeal overload. Who the heck says corporeal anymore? Nobody says that. We just say the body. We don't say corporeal. It was hilarious to me. I was like, really? This is the thing? I was like, no wonder she feel like she feel about MIT. Like, this is the stuff she gets. She gets like this antiquated AI assistant, even though AI is supposed to be like this really new technology, whatever. I was just tripping off that. Then when she got home, I thought it was really funny that the Black guy was preaching on the street. I was like, this reminded me of my hometown, because there was a Black guy that did that in my hometown. He was just out there preaching the word. I'm like, dude, sit down. This is not it. He was talking about Thanos was just the beginning. Tony can't save us this time. I'm like, really, dude? Okay, sit down. I just thought it was funny. But that's the real Black people stuff right there. That resonated with me. I like her little sidekick. I'm going to call her little sidekick. His name was Landon. He was really trying to be helpful, but he was also trying to make some money. I can't blame him for that. But then I am blaming him for that, because like, the homegirl she ain't rich. Okay. So you need to give your girl a break a little bit or something. So this is one of my favorite scenes. And then we get up to one of my favorite scenes in the whole episode, where Riri is outside of her mother's door and she overhears her mother, Ronnie, talking with the aunties. Because they in there and they having their little meeting at the kitchen table, child, talking about Riri and girl, what we finna dip out this child. And I did peep Jewel, one of your favorite famous people, is in here, and I know you love that. And I thought of you when I saw that. I was like, I know Jewel loves this right here. I like it too, because I was a fan of the show. I was a fan of A Different World. So seeing Freddie was a treat for me too. But when she said, when she started burning that sage, it just says, we got to get rid of the stink or you bought it here. I thought that was hilarious. I was like, cause girl, didn't she bring some stink or in here? I was like, I hope that helped people understand that the auntie's meeting place, that's a sacred place. Okay. We getting together. We trying to figure some stuff out. We trying to get some stuff accomplished here. And you don't need to be bringing your ugly energy up in here. Okay. I thought that was good. I was like, I hope people understood that. Yeah, that's a real thing. That's not fake. Black women, we get together and do that kind of stuff. Okay. We do that. But anyway, that was one of my favorite. That was probably my favorite one out of the whole episode. Then Riri, to get away from her, you know, to get away from the auntie, she flees out with her friend Xavier, and Xavier's like, hey girl, what you been up to? And I thought that was funny, because I was like, dude, you know, you probably done heard by now what done happened. If her mama know and the aunties know, you probably know too, but you know, I guess he was trying to keep it light with her or something. And this is the second time that I noticed that Riri mentions that she's feeling small. And that made me think about the first time that she said it in front of the dean in the dean's office. And then it also reminds me of another character in Lovecraft Country, because Hippolyta was also a young and wonderfully talented little girl. And she also won a contest. As a young girl, a comet contest. And, you know, we do see that scene where Riri's at the junkyard with Xavier, or Zay, as she calls him. And, she's talking to the owner, and, the hood's, I thought it was his brother, but it turns out it's his cousin. The hood's friend comes up and pays for the stuff for her, for all the stuff out of the junkyard she wanted to get. And they're talking about her early successes. I just thought this was amazing. They were naming it out. They said that she won it was news articles, actually, where she won the Chicago Science Fair at 12 years old. She finished the ninth grade at 11 years old. She started college at 15 years old. And then I started thinking, this girl is really young, because I said she must be like 19 right now, or maybe in her 20s. I don't know. She is so young, so gifted. It was just beautiful how they were calling out her accolades. I thought that was wonderful. And then, you know, she talks more about, she talks to John about this interview he wants her to go to. I didn't like that whole scene of her in the elevator. It was not good. I didn't like it. So yeah. And then the hood, He was trying to convince her to join the crew and all that. It was, I didn't like it. I knew these people were not up to anything good. I know Riri needed cash, but, I just didn't like her getting involved with these folks. But she, you know, she ultimately decides to join them. And I think it's quite apropos that Cinnamon Song is playing while she's getting her metal suit rebuilt. And I thought it was funny that she like fainted once she realized that Natalie was her AI assistant. And I thought it was funny that Natalie was like, who else would it be, bitch? I was like, what? I was like, not the AI. I thought this AI was an improvement though. Okay. I was like, is that her friend? Really? That's her friend. That's how her friend and her be talking. I was like, okay, that was funny. That was cool. I was like, but I think it was important that she did get her own AI, because Trevor was not going to get it. And Natalie seen way much better, a much bigger improvement, over the other, over the, you know, over Trevor. Natalie was an improvement. Okay. That's what I like. At the beginning of episode two, you know, there was a little shout out to one of my favorite female rappers. Okay. Riri is, you know, trying to figure out why Natalie in here talking to me and stuff. And she trying to hide her new, you know, her, the suit she just made in her room. And, she calls her a glitch and Natalie's like, who you calling a glitch? No, they didn't. I thought the writing was great in here. Shout out to Janatha Hodge, because I was like, girl, did you put UNITY lyrics up in here? Really? In the story? Okay, that was cool. she starts talking about Griot. You know, you were supposed to be like Griot. And I thought it was okay, so I got a little bit okay. Griot. I didn't like how Natalie was dissing Griot. Because she says, Natalie says, sounds like a Victorian era ghost. So, you know, me being the blurred I am, I'm like, what the heck is she talking about, a Victorian era ghost? You know, I thought that was disrespectful. And yes, that is a little disrespectful, because I'm like, okay, the only thing that these things have in common, Griot and a Victorian era ghost, they are from distinct cultures. They are not the same thing. Ma'am, stop trying to diss Griot just because you don't like what your friend said. That's just wrong. I thought that was wrong. I didn't like that. But it was still funny because I was like, you try to get up. Okay, whatever. I was like, whatever, Natalie, Nat, whatever. there was also a little reference to a TV show I used to watch. As Riri is leaving her home to go have her first meeting with the team, Xavier shows up and she says, you again, she says, go home, Roger. And I was like, that's a go shout out to one of my favorite shows, Sister. They used to say that to the aggravating little boy next door all the time. She was like, they were always saying, go home, Roger. It took me right straight to that. So, and I was like, okay, this is a black stuff. They put all these little Easter eggs up in here. I was like, okay. We cut to the scene to the meeting. I just want to say, out of all the folks that were on the team, on the Hoods team, Clown is probably my favorite. Not because of what she does, but I just like her name because I have a thing about clowns. It clown, all kind of clowns. And, you know, I'm a horror fan, but I just thought it was amazing when she did that little thing at the door to slow the door open. It was like some kind of clear thing. It looked like a breath strip, but it was clear and it just exploded the door. I thought that was the neatest thing I ever. I was like, girl, really? She didn't have to break the door down. All she had to do was stick that little thing on there and set it off. It broke the door open. I was like, oh my gosh, I like her. I don't know why. I was like, she has an unusual attachment to explosives, but yay, that's okay. I like her though. Her energy was cool to me. I liked her. I loved her name. she talks about another little, and I learned about, you know, I had to go back and look at what was her little trick, because she talked about her SBD, silent but deadly trick, for this job that the team is preparing for. But I was like, what was the other trick she did? She called it dragon's breath. I thought that was neat too. I like dragons. I'm a fan of dragons too. I thought that was neat. I was like, okay, Cloud, I like you, girl. Let's see what else you're doing. Jewel mentioned something about Riri's suit, about the metaphorical sense of Riri's suit. The thing I wanted to talk about Riri's suit. She comes back home. She goes back home to work on her suit after she's met with the Hoods team. And I start thinking about the metaphorical sense of her suit. And I started looking up things about the suit, about a suit like hers. And it's a highly advanced technological exoskeleton. And an exoskeleton is basically the skeleton on the outside of animals, right? So I started thinking about it metaphorically, and I was like, okay, so this is her exoskeleton. That's what I started thinking of her suit as. This is the thing that protects her from the outside world, right? So I started thinking about how that suit is like a metaphor of her trying to protect herself from the outside world, because, you know, it later on in the next episode, they talk about what happened with her dad and what actually happens with Natalie. And I thought that was a great little metaphor. The suit is a great little metaphor of what is really going on with Riri emotionally, you know, psychologically. She's trying to protect herself. She's in protect mode. Really. And I thought that was a good little metaphor for, you know, for what's going on with her. But let me see what I wanted to say about her meeting with Joe. I don't know. It was a lot. Her whole interaction between Riri and Joe. And I did want to note that meanwhile, while her and Joe are having their driving over to his, you know, his little place where he's hiding his stuff, Natalie escapes. I thought this was funny. Natalie escapes into her Mama Ronnie's projector, introduces herself to Mama Ronnie, like to scare Mama Ronnie to death. And I was like, now why'd she do that to her mom? And then, you know, her and Mama Ronnie start having this conversation about Riri. And I thought that was really a good moment, right? Because I learned some more about Mama Ronnie. And she says this word, ashe, and I didn't know what it meant. I looked it up. It's almost the same as saying amen. So I was like, okay, I got a new word in my vocabulary now. And I like how Natty was like complaining about, you know, Riri's not really actually letting me do what I'm supposed to be doing. And she was like, girl, welcome to Riri's life. I was like, yes, yes, that was good. That was a good moment. And she encourages, she kind of gives the Natalie an idea of to barge in on Riri, which does not end. I mean, it ends okay, you know, because she ends up helping, you know, Riri figure out a second strategy during the heist at the tunnel job. But, I like the little references they had during that whole, scene, the whole thing. I like the little reference to the Addams Family with the hand that detached from the rest of the body and it just kind of crawled up into the, I was like, now that does look like thing. I like that little reference. I like the reference to Spy Kids. I'm not saying I ever watched the show, but I am aware of the show. And I just found it a little bit disturbing that Nat starts having a panic attack. And I was like, wait a minute. And that's when I actually started noticing that there's a very, very deep connection between Nat and Riri, like on another level type connection. And it makes you aware of it in that scene where it seems like Nat, who is an AI, is having a panic attack. And I'm like, what's going on? That was something else, huh? After, you know, when Riri went to Xavier Saba event, I did notice the little joke about, you know, about Padawan versus Trekkies. That was cute. I was like, yeah, I like both of them too. And then she was like, it be your own people. I was like, wait a minute, girl, come on now. We can all like different things. We can all write the same things and we can all like different things. It's okay. Don't go there. It's really not. And I noticed specifically that she didn't tell him about Nat. She had an opportunity to tell him because they were having a conversation about Natalie. And she, I feel like she should have told him about the AI Nat. She should have told him. And of course, that bite comes back to bite her later, in later episodes. But, you know, I thought it was interesting that the mother, when she gets home from the whole tunnel job, the mother is like asking her to make a Gary AI because she liked the Natalie AI so much. And I was like, I don't know. I had a little bit of mixed feelings about that. I'm like, are we Because I thought, for some reason, I thought that it was just Natalie, Riri that was having the still dealing with the issues, the PTSD, dealing with the issues behind what happened to Natalie and her and Gary. But it seemed like the mother is too. And I was like, oh my gosh, that was not good to see. But I'm sorry, Nikita, did you want me to stop now?
I hate to do it to you, but we can talk after. I want to say, and I want to say this, Jennifer, before I close it out, because we're going to run out of time, and I'm sure people listening are going to want to hear more from you, so I'm glad you're showing up. But I love how you perceive everything and kind of break it down. I sometimes think to myself, you know, I have to remember that you're much younger, but it's such a clear view, and I like it. I like it a lot. You and Jewel, right? And it gives me a different perspective, because as Jewel and I were discussing the why, you know, and this is a testament to your blurtiness, both of you, by the way, how you both are able to see the pain of this young lady and tying the suit to her, and tying Jewel and I's conversation, which we'll do after the show, I think, many different views. Because when I watched it, I actually used the message that the father had and what the father said about you have to break something, tear it apart, and then you have to break it, take it apart, and put it back together. That's literally her life. That is literally her life. I thought both of your perspectives were genius, and it's interesting. I'm hoping to know and find out later what other people's are. But since we have like 3 minutes, I'm going to go ahead and do a wrap up of the show. There we go. Got you. Back in the room. So thank you for testing that, and thank you for your patience. Thank you both for your patience. We're going to get this right and the timing right, and how to move forward, because if as we start getting bigger as a room, obviously there may not be speakers that very consistently, you know, will be the ones that come in consistently as we move forward. And we will do the after the show where everyone gets the mic. Thank you, Jennifer, because what you are right now, whether you know it or not, is you are the beta tester for our new podcast, and we can work out all the kinks and all the great things. And, you know, I'm not sure if what we want to do, Jewel and I will discuss this, after we listen to this episode. I think the kinks sometimes make it more real, but I also think you shouldn't have so many kinks. So, that's just the way I kind of think. But it's great. I want to thank you for coming, and I want you to stay for after the pod. Jewel, do you have anything to say before I close it out?
We appreciate your participation, Jennifer, as usual. And thank you, Nikita, for yet another wonderful episode. It's been enjoyable.
Yeah, it's like running up and down and back around the circle, and oh my God, yo, what's happening? Okay, and then coming back to the camera. So it's good. This show, please check it out, Ironheart. It's on Disney Plus. It's a Marvel fan favorite. And let's do this. Let's not watch movie shows based on, you know, prejudice. Let's watch movie shows and TV shows based on how good the show is. And this is a good show, and I hope they get a second season. Part two is going to be next week. You know, literally, people, you know, targeted this show, and that is a sad reflection of a community. Marvel community has always been robust and just love the art of itself. Let's get back to comics or art. And art reflected on screen reflects that. And truth in advertising is this young lady, this young actress did a brilliant job, and all the players did everything that they should. Dominique Thorne did an excellent job, and I want to see her again. And she's going to be in some other shows. Bravo, bravo, bravo. Once again, you know, for Mr. Coogler, picking two directors, two women directors, who black women directors. And that is important for our community. For those of you that say, why is it all of these got to be black? Because it's not usually black. That's why. And when it is amazing. And this is an amazing show. So please watch it. Please share. Please talk about it. Forgive some of the technical difficulties. Technical difficulties help you to grow. It's how you come back from them. All right. Have a great day. Have a great weekend. Hope to see you here next weekend for part two. The last three episodes of Ironheart. Bye.
Bye.